Today's Survivor Preview Podcast, talking with Angie Kontz about the character types of Survivor David versus Goliath, is sponsored by our friends over at Happy Socks. And they've got a great offer for all of our listeners that enter promo code RHAP at checkout at happysocks.com. Get 20% off and free shipping on your order. Happy Socks is the best place to go for socks. Their vision is to spread happiness by turning an everyday essential like socks into a colorful design piece. You've got to see all the designs they've got over at happysocks.com. They've got a range of styles, including dressed, athletic, low, and liner socks for men, women, and children. You can accessorize suits, athletic wear, or dresses to add a touch of personality and color to any look. Plus, they have got socks that are collaborations with the Beatles, Wiz Khalifa, Keith Haring, and more. Plus, they are a great gift for all sorts of occasions like birthdays, the holiday season, anniversary, groomsmen, bridal party gifts, whatever. Remember, use promo code RHAP for 20% off and free shipping on your order at happysocks.com. Not only are they really comfortable, but they are really fun design. So much better than all of the boring black socks that I wear all of the time. There's no time like the present to treat yourself or somebody else. Make gifting a breeze with Happy Socks gift boxes. Go to happysocks.com. Enter promo code RHAP at checkout to get 20% off and free shipping on your order. That's 20% off at happysocks.com with promo code RHAP. Hey, everybody, what's going on? Rob Cesternino back here with a special Survivor pre-season edition of Rob Has a Podcast. And today we are going to be talking with a woman who has invented the world-renowned Kontz type system for predicting Survivor future results. Please welcome back to the podcast my great friend Angie Kontz. Angie, how are you?
Woo! Happy to be here, Rob. Thanks for having the world-renowned inventor back on the podcast.
Yes. Happy Kontz Types Day.
I love it. Kontz Types Day.
Yes. It's all happening, Angie. Here we are. We are closing in on 48 hours away from the Survivor David versus Goliath premiere. And so we are going to take a look at what your system has kicked out in terms of predicting how the players will do just based on the character types that have been cast on the show previously and how their performance has predicted what these future players will do.
Yep, I've got my spiel all ready to go for those people that are brand new to the Character Types podcast, if you want me to kick into that.
Yeah, tell us, first off, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. Really good summer so far. How are you doing?
Okay, wow, you're still in summer.
Well, yeah. I really like to drag it out. In Canada, you gotta live for the high moments.
Drag it out. Yeah. You really got way into Big Brother this summer.
It's ridiculous. I mean, I get super obsessive. And then, I feel like the crash is coming soon and that it's going to be over. And then I'm going to have a big empty void in my life. But yeah, this is the first time I've ever gotten seriously into Big Brother. And that, like, literally as soon as I open my eyes in the morning, I'm checking Twitter to find out what happened in the feeds overnight. It's just like, I don't even know what happened.
Okay. Do you want to give us 15 seconds on who you are rooting for to win?
I'm such a mainstream casual. I've been on Team Tyler from like week two.
Team Tyler. Okay. Yeah. All right. And so has this summer helped push forward a Big Brother character type system?
Oh, it really has motivated me. I've got to say, because it's something, you know, I'm going back and I'm rewatching. I know I've been saying that for a while, but now I have a reality TV show obsessed partner who really wants to understand all the Big Brother references. So we're just finishing up Big Brother 2 again. So I've watched maybe 5 of the super old seasons, and this is one that I'm watching twice. So so I'm getting re-inspired. I actually have all the character types for Big Brother defined. I just have to go through and make sure that everybody gets assigned a character type and then do the analysis of who's most likely to win.
Okay, well, let's get out of that before we lose Josh Wiggler, but that'll save that for
before he just cuts us off mid-sentence.
He's up. Yeah, that's it. Of course, Angie is also my co-creator for the online course that we spent many months working on, Patreon Like a Pro. We'll touch on that at the end of the podcast, but if you want some more information on what we did with building out a system to teach people how to monetize their passion using Patreon, they can go ahead and check that out at patreonlikeapro.com.
Yep. And you'll hear in the course me talking about my my background in digital marketing and fundraising ad nauseum. So that was the major inspiration for creating the character type system as well.
Okay. So, Angie, here we are. And we, of course, you have done this for every season now, going back almost 10 seasons, right?
Yeah, I created the system during Cagayan, and I was like, I was just hashing it all out, and I was trying, and I remember I was emailing you saying that I think Spencer and Tony are going to go really deep, and I think Wu's going to go deep based on the system. And when that turned out to be a reality, you were very, very interested. You said that you thought that the super fans of the podcast would get a real kick out of some of this nonsense that I'm trying to figure out. So, just in terms of a background on what the system is, as I said, I do have a background in digital marketing and specifically fundraising. And in marketing and fundraising, it's a common strategy to try to identify groups by their demographic or type. So in fundraising, charities will even give like a donor type name to the person they're trying to target. They'll have a photo and everything. They'll say, this is Jennifer. She's in her mid-30s and has young children. She doesn't have time to volunteer, but wants to give back to her community. So then it all becomes like, how do we reach out and speak to Jennifer?
Yes, so, the avatar. The avatar. Yes.
Yes. So a few years ago, I started to notice patterns when I was doing my massive binge rewatch of Survivor. I was noticing patterns and the types of people who were cast on Survivor. And I felt like I was seeing the same people over and over again. And I attempted to like identify the types, like let's see if I can fit these people into let's define categories and see if it was possible to fit all the people into these categories. Once I realized that they did in fact fit for the most part, then I tried to analyze them to determine, you know, generally, as a group, how does this category of person perform versus another category of person? And the fun part is that not only does it sort of spit out a bit of a boot list in terms of like who's going to do well and who isn't, but it seems to be eerily accurate at predicting how people are going to play the game. That's the part that I find really, really fascinating.
Yeah. So we are going to talk through what the system has kicked out in terms of how these players are going to do based on what character type they fit in. And then also what character types they will probably end up working with. So
absolutely,
a lot to be taken away from this, just based on who they are, what they do, what their age is, and whatever. What else goes into this profession? Yeah.
And mostly it's their personality too. And, you know, let me be clear, like players are a lot more than their type. Like, this is not a system of stereotyping people and confining them in boxes. It's just an attempt to find patterns and see what these patterns may or may not tell us. And there's also a lot of overlapping qualities where the players may show like elements from several types. And I just have to kind of go with the one that I think is the majority. And I do this by asking myself, like, what do I think this person did to get cast on the show? Like, what did production see in them? Because they're trying to create a diverse cast of personalities, and they found that certain personalities make for better combinations than others. So really, I'm just trying to decode what it is that they've tried to set up for the season each year, and try and you know, identify them that way.
And then, Angie, in terms of game changers, what did the system predict? Can you remind the audience what the numbers were telling you about game changers going into the season?
Game changers or
Ghost Island. I'm getting my G seasons. Was it Guatemala?
That's right. The system last year, I mean, it had a pretty good year in terms of final placement prediction. Like, 8 of the players were pretty much bang on going out exactly where they were supposed to. We did have a couple of big upsets. Wendell put the alpha male control freak on the map in the winner column. But you know what? He was one of those ones that I was kind of like, I've made him this because of certain personality traits that he displayed and admitted that he had. Mm-hmm. But in terms of like, he is far more socially aware than most alpha male control freaks. So I really do think he was kind of a unicorn in that type. So I'm not willing to say that this type is any better off than it was before Wendell came along.
Okay. So we're making a new type, the Wendell.
The Wendell.
And then that if somebody gets the Wendell, the system will kick out that they will win.
Absolutely. And our girl Laurel finished top three, which is very atypical for her character type, which is the Meredith Grey character type.
Okay.
So she did very well for herself. And an upset in the other direction was Morgan, going out way too soon. But you can thank Chris Noble for that.
Okay. Chris Noble's fault. All right. Oh,
totally.
Angie, so are you ready to give us the 20 predictions?
I'm absolutely ready. I've been going over this and over this. It was a bit of a sprint at the end there. I could not do this without Josh Wiggler. Once again, the food dojo has saved my Canadian bacon. This season, just the lack of coverage, the fact that there were no videos, it's very difficult to do this just from the bios alone, because I do not get enough of a sense of the characters' personalities. So also this season in particular, the professions are really throwing off the system. And I really had to rely on the personalities coming through on Josh's interviews to guide me. For example, there are three women on the Goliath tribe who on paper looked absolutely identical. Like it was simply impossible for me to do it until I got a better sense of who they were and heard them speak and stuff like that. So if it were not for first one out, the system would be a bust.
He's doing the Lord's work.
He absolutely is. He absolutely is.
Okay.
So,
all right.
So are you excited about the season though? Like just in terms of like the theme, the players, the.
I think it'd be a stretch to say I'm excited about the theme. That I am excited to have Survivor back. That, you know, for a while there, Big Brother was rip-roaring, and, you know, a little bit Survivor was out of sight, out of mind. But now that we're getting so close, you know, Big Brother has really slowed down to a crawl.
Yeah.
So I am ready to jump back into Survivor on Wednesday night.
Yeah, no, for me too.
It's the natural order of things, the circle of life.
I'm a little nervous that I've been spoiled by International Survivor, but
Big Brother rises, Big Brother falls, only so that Survivor may rise again.
Yeah, it is the ultimate king. So the tribe split though is completely wackadoo. Like, what the hell defines a Goliath anyway? I think they had too many impressive people not to make it to make it not a theme, but not enough to call them the champions tribe. You know what I mean? It's like there's not enough American rugby stars or something.
I was watching a commercial during Big Brother last night for Survivor. And they were in the commercial that they did a halfway decent job. But they were trying to say it's a season of underdogs versus favorites. It's about overachievers and people who have like they were like trying to say it's like four or five different things that like they're trying to capture it all. I'm like, oh, OK.
It's basically fine. Like this is the season about entitlement and privilege, you know, like it's about who drives a Range Rover and everybody else. Right?
Yes. It's, who wears a fake engagement ring?
Engagement ring at the grocery store. Yeah, it's really it's really a stretch. Hearing Probst try to describe the definitions is just
whatever. We're used to it. I mean, the 30s of Survivor has been defined by, you know, trying to shoehorn things into crazy themes. So we're, you know, this is not our first rodeo.
I mean, it would make more sense for the themes to work if they defined the themes before they did the casting. But we saw how that worked out with Blood versus Water. Like when they try and do that, often the characters are really weak, you know?
Okay.
I mean, the newbies won. I didn't mind the returnees, Blood versus Water.
Yeah, we get it. We know the drill at this point. So, all right, Angie. So you're going to give us the reverse chronological order, correct?
I am. So I'm going to
reverse finish, not chronological order. It's not like based on time.
I'm going to tell you who the first one out is, and you're going to go like, "Wow, how does she know that? That's amazing." And then you're going to go like, "No, it's not going to be her." And then it will be her.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're going to think I'm a genius. That's yes. basically how this works.
Okay.
So yeah, I'm going to tell you the character type that's going out in reverse order, the player who is in that character type, and then a little bit of a description as to what that character type is. And then we could just talk about the player a little bit.
Sounds good.
Yep.
Okay.
Okay. First one out. Josh should have just called me and asked.
Yes. Who is it?
It's our, oh no, you didn't. Natalia.
Natalia. Oh, yeah. Okay. This is an upset.
It is an upset. So this is one of the three women who looked
a Goliath,
really alike on paper.
Yes.
So this character type, the, oh no, you didn't, tends to be the, she's the worst performer in the game. So this is the feisty, argumentative one, like, Natalie Anderson, Abby Maria, Jatia. Those are all, oh no, you didn't. They go off on people. They have big ideas.
Mm-hmm.
So the reason why Natalia is in this position is, I mean, a lot of it was just what she was saying about herself. She says she's fun and lighthearted, but then she also says she can be really annoying. She says she yells at people. She's aggressive. She bosses people around and can be overbearing. And that is exactly the definition of an, oh no, you didn't. It's not someone who's completely unlikable. Like Natalie Anderson is really fun, but she's overbearing. She's bossy. She can be a little bit aggressive, that kind of thing. You can still win. It's just, that's typically, traditionally, they don't do very well.
Okay. Do you agree with the system's prediction for Natalia?
I do, actually. I do. And I mean, she wants to build really good relationships with people and learn why people are cast for the show. And I do like this strategy. But I feel like, you know, because of her job, for example, like her career is about process improvement. Finding a problem and solving it is what she says.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like she's going to be that person on day one telling the shelter builders that they're doing it wrong, you know? And you cannot hide who you are on Survivor. And if she's going to blow, she's going to blow. And there's no keeping it back. And then people are just, I think she's just going to make herself an easy first early boot because they're just looking for that one little confrontation to say, like, let's just, you know, I really didn't appreciate it when Natalia did such and such. So let's just get rid of her.
Yeah.
So I think this one's pretty accurate.
I would say that the system and I do not have agreement on this one. I don't think that Natalia is going to be out especially early. One, I don't think that the Goliaths are going to go to too many tribals early on. And I think that she is going to be, you know, enough of a performer. I really get the sense that she seemed like super confrontational based on what she was saying with Josh. So I have more faith in Natalia than the system does.
I got to tell you, I listened to you to the podcast, you and Nicole doing the cast assessment.
Yes.
And I think you guys and I disagree on every single member of the cast.
Okay.
So it's going to be really interesting.
Now, when you say you, is that the system or are you in the system in complete agreement?
There's a couple of places where the system is a little low on someone, and I'm going to say I think they'll do better than this. And there's a couple of places where the system's too high, I think, based on what I've seen. Because I've seen enough of the character types now that, you know, I know what a Heisenberg needs to have to be successful. I know what a, you know, what a Siren needs to bring to the table to go deep into the game or mm-hmm. what have you. So,
okay. Yeah, it's interesting. So you have become one with the system.
I've become one with the system and I know enough to realize that I get the same feedback from people about the system before the season starts every single year. And it's always that, you know, the young professionals, they always feel like those people are going to do really well and they never do,
mm-hmm.
or very rarely do. And the kind of more salt of the earth, older, you know, moms and things like that always go to the end. Like I remember podcasting about Sunday Berquist saying she's going to final three and you saying no way. And I'm like, sorry, dude, she's going to final three.
And I was right. She didn't go to the final three. Nailed it.
Okay. Are we are we ready to go on to number 19?
Okay. So poor Natalia.
Poor Natalia.
The first one out of season 37. Okay. Natalia. Yeah, okay.
It's not me. It's the system.
Yes. Okay. All right. So, Angie, tell us about the second person out from this season.
Second person out. So at number 19 is our Meredith Grey.
Okay.
This was an extremely difficult one to cast this season. There were three potential Meredith Greys, and Natalia was one of them. So
tell us the Meredith Grey. What is that person?
She is a young, intense professional woman. So she plays really hard. She has big ideas, and she tends to have little awareness of how she's coming across to others. So her intensity is usually her issue. She has a very big brain, and she tends to overthink everything. Okay. And she thinks she's moving mountains, and she's out there shaking things up, and everybody's really just planning her blind side.
Okay.
That tends to be what happens to her.
Who is that person?
That person this year is Angelina Keeley.
Angelina. Okay. All right.
Yes. Yeah.
Meredith Grey. All right.
Meredith Grey. So, yes. Again, even though there's a female doctor on this season, Angelina is the Meredith Grey and not Allison the doctor. And I'll get to why I put Allison where I put her. But I'm making her the Meredith Grey. She's the undergrad from Stanford, master's from Yale. CBS has her listed as a financial consultant, even though she's a management consultant, because CBS just seems to make shit up. I don't know why. She wants to bring a poem to the island.
Yeah.
I hated this because... Because you can memorize a poem. She wants to bring it.
Stephen Fishback had to do that.
Yeah. She wants to bring it because she wants other people to see her identify with it. She wants to hang it over her spot in the shelter and say, this is who I am. So she's basically riding poetic coattails. It's pretentious. Like, stop. Like, be who you are and stop trying to tell me who you are. You know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So. See, but with.
Go ahead. I could see this one a little bit more than poor Natalia.
Honestly, it's just because Natalia kept saying to Josh, like, I'm a hothead. I can go off on people. I have to really be careful because I can be bossy and I can, you know, if she didn't say that, she wouldn't be that, you know, like it's, I got to go with the clues that I'm given. So,
Okay.
But yeah, I do believe she's very, very smart, but I also believe she's going to be a complete disaster.
Yes. So. I believe that Jeff Probst said that he thought that he suspected she was going to be high maintenance.
Everyone said she's going to be high maintenance. One of the players said the staff are avoiding her. Like, it's not good. The staff are being paid to assist the players. And if they're avoiding you, it's because you're an a-hole.
Yeah.
You know?
Okay. So, well, you might be an a-hole.
You know, I don't know. I haven't met her. I just, again, I got to go with what I'm being told here. And I can't be up on everybody.
Yes. That being said, if you're a friend of Adam Klein, that Adam Klein doesn't hang out with people that aren't nice people.
Okay.
Okay.
Yep.
All right.
Listening to her talk about how social she is a little bit like those players who tell us that they're funny instead of making us laugh. So I'm inclined to think that she thinks she's more social than she is. And she's in the end, it's going to be like, she's going to be too intense and annoy people. She's going to talk too much, too fast. She's giving me a real Eliza vibe for sure.
Oh, then I would think she would do wonderful.
Well, Eliza went far, but it was kind of because she was annoying. You know, like, prove me wrong, Angela.
You're saying that, not me.
No, I own that.
Okay. All right.
I own that.
Okay. Angie. All right. Are you ready to talk about the 18th place finisher in Survivor David versus Goliath?
Yeah. It's our True Grit. You're not going to like this.
Oh, no. Who is it?
It's Carl, the truck driver.
Why? Because I picked him to win?
Yeah.
I mean, I wasn't super invested in if he wins, believe me, I'll take credit for it.
It was the longest 15 minutes of my life waiting for you to pick at the end of that podcast. Like,
why?
Oh,
it was too boring?
Because you obviously weren't thinking it through because Nicole took your pick and then you were completely blindsided.
Yeah.
You were lost.
With the picks that I usually have somebody that like really jumps out at me. I didn't have that. I sort of settled on that I was going to pick Dan. And then when I heard how hot Nicole has like no poker face with these winner picks, I knew that she was going to pick him. And then I was sort of torn between, I was looking at Davey and I was looking at Carl. And I felt like that, I bet Carl knows how to make the fire better than Davey. That
you were really floundering. Good. I don't know. Like,
Angie, take it easy.
You were obsessing over who can make a fire. Like, when does that ever mean anything?
When does that ever mean? Have you watched Survivor 35 and 36?
When they have to. Yeah. Okay.
I'm not talking about to get the. I'm thinking far down the line. I'm thinking of who can be there at the Final Four and who's going to be able to make that
fire
in the Final Four challenge.
Okay, but you've got like you've got over 30 days to figure it out when you're there. Like hands-on experience, you can watch people who know how to do
because
it.
Because everybody figured it out when they were there.
I think if you're a super fan and you're worrying about it, Carl's not a super fan. He's not even going to know that this is a thing. He's like, what's a fire making challenge? That's Carl. That's your winner pick.
I would prefer to have the person that just knows how to do it as opposed to the super fan who's going to obsess to. Josh Wigler obsessed about learning how to do it before he went to Ghost Island.
He's a truck driver. What does he know about making fire?
He's a cowboy.
Okay.
Okay. Tell me about why you and the system hate Cowboy Carl.
Okay. So the true grit is typically an older male who's usually a retired professional athlete or military guy. So it was a bit of a stretch to put Carl in here. I had a really hard time figuring out what to do with him. My first take was that he might be my Heisenberg, but listening to him talk to Josh, he sounded so nice. And he said he's like, oh, I'm a really laid back guy. And that went completely out the window because that is the opposite of a Heisenberg. So he says he's the most like Ceri because she never gave up and always pushed herself when she was up against things she couldn't do.
True. Do you remember that one challenge where she
I hate props for this. I hate him. So it's not because of her masterful triple layered blindside. It's because she got across the balance beam that last time she played.
Yeah.
Oh, so yeah. I mean, he's a true grit because he's like, he's a tough guy. He can handle the heat. You know, he's not afraid of stuff. You see what you get with him. He gives zero Fs. People won't realize he's a threat. He seems to be like he likes meeting people and talking to people, which is good because the true grit usually struggles with their social game. And I feel like Carl is far more likable than your average true grit. So, you know, the typical true grit character type players that you would know would be like Tom Westman, Jeff Kent, Brad Culpepper, that kind of thing.
Yeah, but who are the true grit people that killed this character type and you know, buried it down to 18th place?
They tend to, they're not the ones that you remember because they finish pretty like right in the middle of the road. I can read some more off for you if you really want to know.
I mean, from what I understand about the system, that this is all people who, you know, their placement is so low. So I feel like there's got to be like a lot of first and second boots.
Yeah, it's on average. And on average, they're all around 15, 16, 17. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Brendan Shapiro, 17. Alan Ball, 15. John Rocker, 16, Cliff Robertson, 14, Brad Culpepper, 15, Jeff Kent, 10, Stephen Wright, 10, Tyrone Davis, 16, Tom Westman in Heroes Villains was 16. You know, there's a lot of like,
I thought we don't count returning players, Angie.
Yeah, you don't count returning players.
Oh, but you do?
I do when it's a newbie season. When I take out the newbie seasons when I'm analyzing just a returnee season because they behave very differently.
Okay.
But I found it less accurate when I started taking out the returnee seasons for the newbies.
Okay, so you're down on Cowboy Carl.
You got to trust me. Let me do my thing here.
Okay.
Yeah, I think he'll do better than 18 for sure, but I don't think he has the strategic chops to win at all. So I can kind of see him making Final Three and getting like super angry when he gets zero votes. So.
Wow. People will give Cowboy Carl zero votes.
I think so. I think he's like the Rick, right? Rancher Rick.
But Rick didn't get to the finals. If this person gets to the end, I think people are going to be like, we love this guy.
I think they'll like him, but I don't think he, it'd be like Hannah. Everyone liked Hannah too. It just, it doesn't mean that they're going to look at him compared to the other people and respect his game. That's all I'm saying.
I like Hannah. I don't know if everybody there loved Hannah.
She's pretty lovable. What's not to love?
You're talking to the person that likes her. I don't know if everybody
I think
was
we
like,
all like her.
Nobody liked her enough to give her a vote.
Well, because she didn't play the game hard enough. If someone's going to stand up and say they don't like Hannah, Hannah's no good, they're going to say.
Okay. All right. Hardly. So, all right. So we have our first three boots. Who is the fourth boot of this season?
Okay. Number 17 is our Lady Gaga. And this year, this season, it's Lyrsa Torres.
Okay. Can you explain the Lady Gaga?
Yes. So this is the typically the female who is not like any of the others. She's a little bit flaky, a little new agey, sometimes a little bit annoying. You know, this character type is one of the least likely to get in a showman. So you've got like your Michelle Fitzgerald, Courtney Merritt, Sugar Piper. That's the type of person who's the Lady Gaga. So they can be very likable, very bubbly and very sweet, but sometimes they're a little bit like, they're not mainstream. So sometimes the things that they do, their hobbies, their views on the world can be a little bit off-putting to some of the other players.
Yeah, I could see Lyrsa not lasting super long on the season. That is one that I feel like is in line with. I feel like that she's somebody that could be a target on the David tribe. So I think that sort of fits the profile of somebody that could go out early.
Yeah, no, for sure. She says she's super scared. She's been practicing puzzles a lot, which I think is a great idea. I wish every player would practice fire and puzzles before they got out there. I think that's pretty smart to know how to do it. She's funny. She swears a lot. I like that.
Okay.
I swear a lot. Mm-hmm. I think the other players are going to like her. Again, I have no idea why she's listed as an airline agent. Can I just say, like, when I was studying literature at U of T, I worked at a gas station. Would my CBS bio say I'm a gas station attendant because of that? Because she's studying gastronomy and anthropology in school and wants to study the history of cookbooks. So clearly, whatever she's doing to pay her way through college is what she is defined as by CBS.
Well, what would you like to see them define her as, a student?
She's been like a chef. She refers to herself as a chef. And I'm like, aren't you like a ticket agent or something?
Yeah, I think that maybe to try to make the David versus Goliath theme work, they want people that have jobs that don't sound like that, you know, a chef. Oh, she must be a Goliath of the kitchen, of the culinary arts. Whereas like a ticketing agent is like, oh, okay, she's out there working hard every day, like David.
Someone who cooks for a living is far too elitist.
Yes.
To be on the David tribe.
Yes, they have a lot going on. Okay.
Okay, so the ocean freaks are out. The reptiles freak her out. I think it's problematic, but I think she's going to make that kind of thing funny. She claims to be very social. And you know what? She seemed really likable as well. And I don't want to assume she's going to struggle with the physical aspect of the game. I know some people have been saying that, but I think it's not good. I don't think she's going to be as strong physically as necessarily some of the other people on her tribe. But you know, the fact that she met her girlfriend at a kickboxing class tells me at least she's active and, you know, she works out. Perhaps she's potentially really strong. The probe says that he's scared she's going to yell at someone and get voted out. I almost made her my, oh no, you didn't, for that reason. Mm-hmm. But her attitude, from what I heard, she just struck me as very kind of flippant and funny. Like, the other players were referred to her as like heartless and a little crazy, but I think she's just kind of practical. So, she's not like everyone else, but sometimes, that's the only reason why players need to vote someone off. And I think it is likely, in fact, that she'll go out early, but I think it'll be for like a stupid reason, like the aqua dump vote off or something like that. It won't be for anything that she specifically did wrong. It's just going to be like, she looks like an easy target, so let's just pick her.
Okay. All right.
You know,
those are our first four boots. Our fifth boot, Angie, this person got swap screwed.
Potentially swap screwed. Yeah.
Yes.
So number 16 is the specialist.
Okay.
And this season's specialist is the mayor of Slamtown.
The mayor of Slamtown, John Hannigan.
John Hannigan. I have so much to say about this guy.
Okay.
So first of all, this character type needs the least explanation. It's the middle-aged guy who loves himself and all his glory day stories. So the mayor of Slamtown was the only one who was reciting his resume to Josh and talking about wanting a belt when he wins. So it seemed like a bit of a no-brainer. But in terms of John Hannigan, like as a person, I love this guy. Like he's smart. He's funny. He's self-aware. He's also an athletic beast. He's essentially the whole package. So, I mean, I need to say that I know nothing about pro wrestling, like nothing. And what this reminded me of, this is a bit of an aside, but you know, when you and I first met, Rob, I was not a Big Brother watcher at all. And my first exposure to Mike Boogie was through your podcast.
Okay.
Because I was watching. Yeah, I was watching Derek's season. That was the first American Big Brother that I watched. And Mike Boogie was on. And I was really struck. Like, my impression of him was that he was highly articulate, observant, mature man. Like, I really enjoyed listening to his insight. And then when I went back and watched season two and I saw the spiked hair and the god-awful rapping, the rapping, Rob, I was like, what is this? So I feel like my impression of John is like that. I'm going to see a clip of him being like the seducer of whatever, and I'll be like, what in the crap is that? Because all I will know is the John Hannigan that I see on Survivor, and I have a feeling I'm gonna really like this guy.
Mm-hmm.
His philosophy is that having fun's important. If you aren't having fun, then you aren't fun to watch or to be around. And he gets that this is ultimately a social game. But unlike a lot of the other players, he's never going to forget that this is also a television show, because he's ultimately an entertainer. And I think that's going to make him really fun to watch, because he's never going to forget that there are cameras there and that he needs to perform for them, which I think is going to be a really interesting element to this season.
Yeah, no, I think he's going to be really fun, and I'm looking forward to seeing what he does. And I agree with you that I'd be pretty surprised if he could make it to the merge.
I think he's actually going to do a little bit better than the system thinks. What I wanted to say about him in particular, in terms of like being the specialist, is I noticed something kind of unique with him. I want to call him the pseudo specialist, in that I believe he was cast on the show to be the specialist 100%, but he has a maturity and self-awareness that the specialist doesn't have. So at one point, for example, in his interview with Josh, they're talking about leaving social media for a month or whatever. And John says to Josh, what about you? And I was completely taken aback, because asking about another person is a very unspecialist thing to do. And I almost feel like he loved wrestling growing up, and he put on this persona in order to be a wrestler, but I think it's kind of an act. It's like Tyler growing out his hair to get cast on Big Brother. It's not who he is.
Mm-hmm.
And I also think that he's never actually been himself in a public venue before. And the thought of it kind of terrifies him. It's like he's trying to be two people simultaneously, almost like the Incredible Hulk. Like, it's like a guy having a branding conflict, like in before our eyes. It's like he's two people, and he's so used to pretending to be this Mayor of Slamtown character, and then trying to leave that behind and be himself is really unnatural for him. But I don't know. I'm going to say, if there's ever been a specialist who has a chance to win the game, I'm going to say it's this guy.
Yeah. And I think that unlike some other specialists that you have documented over the years, I feel like he's in on the joke. You know, he sort of has more self-awareness than other specialists might have.
And I think it's because it's not fundamentally who he is. He can kind of sit outside of himself and say, I'm not a specialist, but I play one on TV, you know?
Yeah. Okay. All right. So here he is, that he is the fifth boot, according to the system.
Yeah, I think that's a little low, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. Look, I think every week we get with this guy will be a gift.
I agree. I hope he goes far. I really do.
Okay. All right. Angie, the sixth person out of this season, who do you got?
We got our pony boy, who is Davey Rickenbacker.
Okay, Davey Rickenbacker, mm-hmm. much like another pony boy, Eric Reichenbacker.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, here is Davey the pony boy. Can you please explain the pony boy for our listeners?
Yeah, the pony boy, it's a reference to The Outsiders, the book. So it's essentially the male character, the younger male character, who is kind of outside of the mainstream. So there's usually something about them that makes them a little bit unusual. Their profession is unusual, or, you know, they tend to be a little bit more sensitive, a little bit more aware, emotionally in touch with themselves and with other people. They're not the player that is like a bro who's out there broing down with all the bros. So I feel like Davey is a really good representative of the pony boy. There were a lot of potential pony boys this season. So between the Meredith Greys and the pony boys, it was really, really tough. So because this guy is a blurred, a self-proclaimed blurred, I felt like that was a really pony boy thing to be. I gotta say, like, he lists Rick Grimes as his hero.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really hoping he's not planning on approaching Survivor like Rick Grimes, because Rick would be a terrible Survivor player.
Yeah, he'd be one of the worst, I would think. His leadership issues are, you know, well documented. You might say he's Tom Westman, but most of the time it has not gone great.
No. Like, you want to be Carol, right? When you're playing Survivor. Like, she's never been the leader. She blends into any group without drawing attention to herself. She never does something she doesn't want to do. Can kill anyone. Can survive alone. Won't get in a showmance and sabotage up her game.
She's been some showmances.
Yeah, but now she didn't screw up her game from it. And she'll single-handedly free her entire tribe when they're about to get eaten while baking a batch of cookies.
Mm-hmm.
So...
Yeah. So I'm higher on Davey than the system is. I think that he's going to be okay. Anything specifically that you feel not so great with him about?
Yeah, I hate the I want to create chaos approach to Survivor. I think it undermines far more than it serves. So much of Survivor needs to be approached in phases. Like, phase one is the create good bonds with everybody on your tribe and survive the swap, in my mind. And people not trusting each other and having to go to tribal completely undermines that. Like, you cannot win challenges without a cohesive tribe, which means trips to tribal. And if he's thinking of like maybe he's doing this because he's thinking of like consciously committing Matt Singh, but you know, God, that's so dangerous. Like, you better be damn sure you will never be targeted by your own tribe if you're purposely trying to make everyone doubt each other and whittle down your tribe. I think it's survivor suicide, and I think he'll get caught, and I don't see the point. So I really don't like that idea. If I'm just, you know, I'm going to be a prankster, I'm going to be, you know, creating all kinds of doubt and mistrust. And I just, like, it barely worked for Russell.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know?
And, okay. Yeah. All right. So you make a good point.
Yeah. And he does say, like, it's a bit of a conflict, too, because he says he's going to win by treating the tribe like a pack of Siberian huskies, because he breeds huskies. And my bet is he doesn't raise his huskies by trying to make them pissed off at each other. But yeah, I am a little worried. He's going to make moves just for the sake of making moves and get himself into trouble. Because ultimately, this is where, you know how we were saying that John Hannigan understands that it's a TV show. Other people sometimes, I think their understanding of it being a TV show is, you know, I don't want to get an invisible edit. I need to make my mark. And then they start doing random things just to be a big character and hope to come back again, or at least be fun, or at least be remembered. And I don't know.
Yeah.
I guess it's one way to go, but it screws up other players' games too. And I think it's disrespectful to the game, but maybe I'm too much of a diehard.
Yeah, that I can understand why you feel like it's a bad way to go, but I'm disrespectful for the game. I mean, at least he's trying. At least he's doing something.
Yeah, I mean, it's better than blending into the background and you know, getting voted off before you can do anything. It's just it's a predicament. I don't know what I would do. I don't know how I would approach it, honestly. Okay. I think I would try and win, and I'd be really boring.
All right. Angie, who is the 14th place finisher? Maybe our merge boot.
Maybe the merge boot is I Can See Your Periscope, who is Natalie Cole, our 56-year-old publishing CEO. So this is the Cass, the Lauren Rimmer. This character type tends to get most improved award over the last few years of Survivor because they never win, but they're making the merge more and more these days. So the curve is still pulling her down. So she's still only on the cusp of the merge here. But in modern Survivor, this character type is doing better and better.
Okay.
So it tends to be the wise older woman who can see through all of your crap.
Do you factor in whether or not Natalie is a mom?
I do, but it's also her personality.
Did you determine that I was under the impression she didn't have kids?
I'm under the impression she doesn't either, or she's simply not talking about them.
Yes. And does that change anything when it's somebody who is a mom versus not a mom in this character type?
again, it's a mixture of different things that I'm looking for. So I'm essentially looking at how seasoned she is in her profession and how difficult it was for her to get there. A lot of the time, this character type is defined by someone who's had to succeed in a man's world. So often it'll be like a female police officer or a, you know, a firefighter or something like that, or a, you know, a lawyer sometimes. You know, someone who's really tough. Like, you look at someone like Lauren Rimmer, and that's exactly who this character type tends to be. And Lauren Rimmer was a mom. It didn't make an ounce of difference. You know, she is this type for sure.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Do you feel better or worse about Natalie than what the system is telling you?
I don't think she's making it this far.
Okay.
So I feel worse than what the system's doing. I'm not high on her. She spent a really long time with Josh telling a long-winded story about her career. So I think that that's a little bit telling that she's not going to listen.
What do you want her to talk about?
I want her to talk about the game and, you know, what she's perceiving in other people and what her approach is going to be. And I know most people are really high on Natalie. I just felt like she's so used to... I think you need a certain bloody-mindedness mm-hmm. to achieve what she's achieved. And she's got kind of blinders onto her own vision and her own experience. She wasn't turning to Josh and saying, what about you, Josh? You know, she wasn't saying like, I'm really intrigued by this person and that person. And I want to work with that person. And, you know, she was talking about who she had already decided who everyone was and who she was going to cut. And I just don't feel like she's going to listen mm-hmm. to who the other people are. I don't think her relationships are going to be where they need to be. And this is going to be doubly brutal for her because everyone's perceiving her as this mother character that's going to give them a hug when they need it. And that's the last thing she's going to do. Mm-hmm. So I really feel like, you know, when it's clear that she's not making sandwiches for anyone, she's going to like lose all of her appeal. She's not doing anyone's laundry. She's not making the rice. I think she's going to be really no all business and no bullshit. And I think she's going to be the weakest at the challenges. And I really don't think they're going to see any reason to keep her, especially if she hasn't made any of the relationship bonds. If they don't even feel like she's a solid vote in their alliance, then what's the point?
Yeah.
I really do think she'll be first off when the Goliaths go to tribal.
Well, I feel like that she could have some protection from the Goliaths being better in the challenges and that they'll be able to sort of just, you know, she's not going to be the reason, you know, that they're losing because they might be able to win. I think that she's going to struggle when we like swap to three tribes and now she's on a tribe with five people and now she's like a key cog in the challenges.
Yes. No, that's true as well. I mean, it's possible that she may be able to bond with like Mike White and John Hannigan on a professional level. Like, you know, they may know of her. They may be talking about being, you know, the writing process and how difficult it is to be successful. And if she's able to make some sort of professional bond with them, they may keep her safe. But... Mm-hmm. But you're right. As soon as the pressure's on and she's like one of five people that are either like getting over the wall or not getting over the wall.
Right. Because hypothetically, say Goliaths win the first immunity challenge and now David's vote somebody out. It's like, OK, second immunity challenge. All right. Goliaths, who are you sitting out? And so if they can just get a cushion, they don't really need any, you know, great performance from her. You know, they could go ahead and, you know, pick spots where they want to maybe sit her out. But yeah, then the onus is going to be on her when they go down to smaller tribes.
Well, I know you're high on the Goliaths winning all these challenges, but I think the reason why they put Alec on the Goliath tribe is because they're like, we've got a bunch of like old people on the Goliath tribe and they're going to lose. So let's get the young, fit guy on there. Let's shoehorn him onto that tribe.
Who are the old people on the Goliath tribe?
Mike.
Yeah.
Natalie.
Okay.
I'm just looking at like... The young, fit guy. Again, I think that's why they put Dan over there as well. Like, Carl and Pat are not super fit, and they're on the David tribe. No. What I'm saying is, I just think it's not one-sided. That's mm-hmm. all. I think, like, a lot of the young, fit guys are on the other side. Maybe I'm overestimating.
Nick
let me
and
look
Davey.
At Let me look at these guys. I think that both Natalie and Mike are not going to be great in the challenges. And I think it only takes a couple people. Like, you can put them on puzzles, and like, the problem is a lot of the time in the challenges, like the puzzle aspect, it also has like a throwing component or something like that. Like, it's very difficult to have no physical strength and somehow still be an asset in the challenges. Yeah. You know,
I think the women on Goliath, I think, are more athletic too.
Yeah, no, that's the women. Yes, I think that's fair to say.
You know, B is probably a standout, and I think Elizabeth looks like she's strong, but I don't know. I feel like that they're outgunned, the David tribe, but who knows? I'm always wrong with this every season.
It's difficult to say until you see someone at the see what they actually do. Because some people that look really fit are like super uncoordinated as well. So you never know.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Are you ready for number 13?
Yes.
Okay, number 13 is our Seduce and Destroy.
Yes, okay.
Who is Hot Cop Daniel.
Oh, Hot Cop is low in the system.
He is. I had no idea what to do with Daniel. I flip-flopped on him in about three different categories.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the Seduce and Destroy, in all fairness, is probably the most diverse character type that I have, and to the point where perhaps it even needs to be split into two, because we have the smart, accomplished Seduce and Destroy.
Mitosis.
We have like a hot and douchey Seduce and Destroy. We even in some cases have a third category, which is like the naive, sweet, young, handsome Seduce and Destroy, and that's what I see Dan as.
Okay.
So usually this guy gives off kind of a salesy and smarmy vibe, but sometimes he's just like this love-struck sweetheart fumbling through the game. And ultimately, Daniel gave me a real Eddie Fox and Reynolds kind of vibe, so that's why I put him here.
Okay. Do you want to give the reference for Seduce and Destroy?
Yeah, Seduce and Destroy is from a Tom Cruise film where he is a motivational speaker where he's trying to teach men how to slay women and tame the P word.
yeah. Magnolia. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So, you're down on Hot Cop.
Yeah, I am down on Hot Cop, but I, you know, he's cute, he's sweet. Again, I think he's got that Eddie Fox kind of vibe, so he could like latch onto someone and do okay. But just in terms of like who he is and what I went on, the Hot Cop viral sensation that he was, I did Google it. Mm-hmm. I took the hit on my search history because I feel like it's kind of expected of a woman at this stage in my life. It's basically just a headshot selfie in a parking lot of like three fully clothed dudes just smiling nicely. I was frankly expecting more. I think they're thirsty in Florida.
You have the right to remain thirsty.
Like, he's got, it's really like just from like the neck up, it's not even anything. So it's like, how did this go viral? I mean, he's got a sweet face, but geez. So he's a dad who likes his stepdad. He likes country music. I looked up that song that he quoted in his bio.
Mm-hmm. Is it Chase Rice song?
No, the Brad Paisley song is probably the same thing.
Yeah.
Country music is not my thing. It really isn't. I mean, not to insult country music, I guess, but it just seems like a very...
What does the system say about country music?
It's no good. It's not high on country music. But that's the thing. Like, the Pony Boys are often the country music guys, not the Seduce and Destroy.
Okay.
It's I don't know. It's like such a basic narrative, like to hearing this, like it's literally a story of a guy who got a stepdad and he turned out to be like a really great guy. It's like the storytelling equivalent of a knock knock joke.
Yeah.
You know?
OK, well, let's get back to Hot Cop. So if the narrative here is that you feel like that he's sort of, you know, this likable guy, how is he the merge boot? What happened to him?
I think strategically, he's just not going to see the blind side. The blind side's coming. Like, he's just not, he's not a cutthroat kind of guy. So I think he's going to, you know, he's going to bond with people. He's going to do what they tell him to. But ultimately, I think he's in over his head. He doesn't know what he's doing. So I can't see him winning the game because he won't know how to maneuver properly once the merge happens.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So
I think he's, you know, he might do better than this. This place where the system has, but I don't think he's going that far.
Okay. I don't think that the past game knowledge is that much of a deal breaker. I feel like it could be the difference between maybe like him winning or not winning, but I don't know if it's going to hold him back so far that, you know, he's a likable, affable guy. I kind of feel like that he's around for a while.
He just doesn't have the instinct for the game. Like, he's a real sweetie. Like, listening to him and Wiggler, like, geek out on comic books for, like, a really long time was pretty awesome. But I'm just thinking, this guy is not gonna... He does not have a killer instinct.
I get that. But, like, I kind of feel like that's... It's, like, the difference between him coming in, like, 7th than 13th.
Yeah. No, you could be right.
Okay. All right. Angie, let's talk about the second member of our jury.
Number 12 is our social butterfly, who is Jeremy Crawford.
Okay, social butterfly, Jeremy.
So this is the male player who is vivacious, outgoing, extremely social, and very easy to like. So he bonds equally with both men and women. So I was really impressed by Jeremy.
Okay, not that impressed.
Well, the system is what the system is. But what I found about Jeremy, I found like he's extremely observant. Like he understands people on a very deep level just from watching behavior. Let's put it this way. If I got hit by a bus tomorrow, he could take over during the Character Types podcast. Because
he could?
Like, I believe so. Like so much of this job is being able to just kind of intuitively understand who people are based on very little information.
Will?
It is now. Okay. Like I didn't have a successor before. I'm naming it now.
I thought Sean Falconer or Amanda Rabinowitz was going to step in.
No, that's a different system that they do. Like the intuitive understanding of it. Like that's the thing. Like when people submit their guesses for what the character types are, there's a reason why they're 50% wrong most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
It's because they like I get a feeling about someone. I just know it okay. That they're gonna. You know, I know the specialist is a specialist because I can feel it. I don't question it. I just do it.
You look at somebody and then you can. It comes to you.
I get a hit.
Yeah.
Basically. Yeah. No, but he's the same way. He's incredibly good at it. And you can see him basing, you know, the observations he's making at Ponderosa are very astute, like on very little information. He's concocted a whole personality analysis of a person simply because, you know, they ask the cooking staff for something at the time versus later, you know, and it's just like, I think that that will serve him very well in the game, as long as he keeps this as his analysis to himself.
Okay.
Because, you know, it can be very off-putting. Like, if you know, people need to feel like their insecurities and motivations and deceptions are hidden from the world. And if he keeps pointing it out, I think even his alliance is going to be like, Jeremy's too smart. Maybe we should turn on him.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I think...
So you like him. Well, why is he in 12th place?
He's in 12th place because typically, you know, Donathan is also this character type. Sometimes they can be a little erratic and not always super strategic. So I think he's going to do better than 12th for sure. I think he's not going to be bossy. I think he has a good understanding of the game. He's not aggressive. I think he's going to be very savvy. He's one to watch for sure.
Okay. All right. So, Angie, give me the third member of our jury.
That's our siren, Kara Kay.
All right, the siren, Kara Kay.
So the siren is the character type who uses flirtation and charm as her social capital. So they're extremely charming and they usually do very well in the game. In Modern Survivor, however, there seems to be like a halo effect coming out of Parvati that they are so often seen as a threat if they remind anyone even a little bit of Parvati. They see them coming a mile away and vote them out. So it's harder and harder, I find, for the sirens to do well.
Yes. Okay. You know what? Nobody wants to say the P word anymore.
No, they don't.
Yeah.
They don't. So, so reading her bio, I became obsessed with her comment about her using a mirror to start a fire. She said she wanted a mirror as one of her items so she could, use it to start a fire. Cause I was like, did she make a mistake or she really looked into it and discovered that you can in fact use a mirror?
Like, what did you find?
I found that you can. It has to be curved. You can use a small vanity mirror, but you have to do it off the ground. So I ended up like spending the afternoon watching this super sketchy looking guy on YouTube start one using a vanity mirror and a tampon. And now I'm like, I can't unsee it. So my thinking is
who
that
knew?
She... Yeah, I didn't know because I'm like, whatever, you can't use a mirror. Then I found out that you could, but it's so tricky. I'm like, she doesn't know that you like you can, but it has to be 2 feet off the ground. And I think she meant to say magnifying glass, which significantly changes my opinion of her.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
And she uses words like unrelenting. I'm trying not to judge. So.
Okay. All right. So,
but she seems very pleasant, though, and easy to get along with. She does seem like your typical siren. So I think she's going to be pretty. I think she's going to get an alliance, and she'll do just fine until they feel threatened by her niceness and kick her to the curb.
Yes. All right. So, I mean, I feel like a third person on the jury, I could see it.
Yep.
I feel like you have agreement here. Okay. All right. All right, Angie, who is the fourth member of our jury?
So next is our Little Red Riding Hood, who yes. is Jessica Pete, our 19-year-old waitress.
All right. Here she is. Little Red Riding Hood. Who is the Little Red Riding Hood in general?
It is the young, sweet student type. This is the character type that literally gets carried on the back of Boston Rob to the end. So she only wins when the strategist who got her there is either hated by the jury or voted out because he failed the final endurance comp.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's you, Rob.
Yes. Yes. Okay. So, Angie, tell me, what do you see in Jessica?
Well, she grew up watching the game, but Stephanie LaGrossa is her inspiration. So, you know, she had me and then she lost me. It's been a roller coaster of emotions with Jessica here. She says she'll play like Sarah, but I don't really see it. She doesn't want to say how old she is. She says she's going to be, she's going to be 22. She's got this whole story worked out. You and Nicole talked about this. She's spending way too much time worrying about her backstory to sell her being older. Nobody cares, Jessica. Like to people over 30, there's no difference between 19 and 22.
Mm-hmm.
So
I think maybe there's like a little, I do think that there is a bit. I mean, we went through this with Michael Yerger, and I think that, you know, after a while he could have said that, you know, he was 12, and I think don't think anybody would have cared.
Exactly. But,
I feel like there's a little bit of like, I feel like that 21, I think says adult. And I think that 19 is a little bit more, you know, you're a teenager. So I kind of get where she's coming from, but she's probably obsessing about it way too much. I think what Michael Yerger showed us was it's more important how you carry yourself than what the actual number is.
Exactly. So it's like how she's perceived in her behavior and her maturity level is the only thing that matters, not this story of when she graduated.
Mm-hmm.
She thinks people will think she's super sweet. And yeah, that's because you're super sweet.
Yeah.
So, you know, Pope says she's really mature, but, you know, whatever. He says a young person will win one day, but I'm not holding my breath. I think she'll get far, sure, because she, again, it's like, this character type usually does go pretty far because they're very, they tend to be easily influenced. Every once in a while, there's one that's a bit of a rogue player, but that's few and far between.
Yeah. Do you think that you agree with the system that she will make it this far, fourth member of our jury?
I think that's fair to say.
I'm selling.
I think it's far more likely she'll go out earlier than it will that she'll go further than this. I think this is it's possible.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say she's not going to do it, but
yeah. I don't have high hopes.
Yeah, it's not like I'm going to be heartbroken if I turn out to be wrong.
I think
about
you might.
This. You think?
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Angie, fifth member of our jury. Who is it?
Mr. Miyagi, Mike White.
Okay.
Ned Schneedly himself. Yeah.
Is Mr. Miyagi.
Yep.
Okay.
So this is the older male player who is wise, has some life experience. He's often the dad of the tribe. And he's also often one of the narrators of the season. So they tend not to be too cutthroat,
yeah.
too. They tend to be kind of sweet.
You know,
he says he's... Go ahead.
Okay. That I feel like that after getting a few days further away from the Survivor preview, I kind of feel like that I think I'm a little more down on Mike White than I think originally I was.
I'm very nervous about Mike, to be honest.
Because that Mike, in terms of like in talking with Josh, when he talked about doing this, he's like, oh, this will be really fun. this will be great. And if I'm out early, I'm out early. It'll be a fun story to tell at a cocktail party. And it just looks like it's going to be so miserable out there. I worry that Mike White seems like he has a great career. He's going to tell people I have money. I think that he, similarly to Jimmy Johnson, I think that he could very early on say, what the hell do I need this aggravation for?
Yeah. No, I worry about that as well.
What am I doing here?
I think he's enough of a fan that he's kind of mentally prepared himself for it.
It's day 7. I want to kill myself. And this is terrible that I'm going to go back to my house.
Yeah. You want a dead son-in-law, Miss Seeley? Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think he has mentally prepared himself for this. Honestly, his flippant, dismissive attitude, I think it is 100% about him trying to set the bar super duper low in case he's an early boot. Like, he wants to be able to exceed all expectations, and he really doesn't want to go in there like someone like Zeke, where everyone was thinking like, oh, here's a super fan. He really knows the game. He's played, you know, he's really going to crush this and then be like the second person off. He's really trying to say, it's okay. It's just, you know.
Yeah. And I think under ideal conditions that maybe it's a different story, but it looks like it's going to be so miserable out there. I'm very worried about Mike White.
Yeah, no, me too. Me too. And you know what? Him saying that it makes a better story if he's the first one out, that's just how you know he's a writer. That's not him being like blasé about it. It's like, the fact is, like, he's one of these people that is literally planning the story before he's even had the experience. And that's just who he is. And it means that his confessionals are going to be awesome. So I'm really, really looking forward to that.
Okay. All right. That is Mike White. Anything else on Mike White?
I liked his statement about why he was going to win. He kept it it was very simple. I have the desire and I know the game. And I don't know. It just seemed incredibly succinct and very, very truthful. You know, like you need to have a fundamental understanding of how it's played, and you need to have a very deep motivation, like a real desire to win it. And I think he might be a bit of a dark horse, but I'm also highly cognizant of the fact that I personally like him very much, and I can tell my personal bias is making me higher on him than he probably will be.
Okay. All right, Angie, our sixth member of the jury, who is it?
It's our Chelsea handler, who is Gabby.
Gabby, the Chelsea handler. Okay.
Yes.
All right. This is far for Gabby, I think.
It's not. She's one of the ones that I'm very high on and you guys are pretty low on. Okay. So the Chelsea handler typically is the witty girl who appeals to the nerd. She's usually funny, intelligent, cute, but often a little anxious and neurotic. So, she's kind of an interesting, character, because she tends not to have a super impressive profession, nor is she typically, you know, like your pinup girl or super athletic or anything like that. She's usually like all personality. And, I was really liking Gabby in her interview with Josh. I found her as a person to be very, interesting and intriguing to me. She says she's open and vulnerable. She's very emotional. You can tell that she's very smart. And I think she will appeal to people and they're going to want to trust her. I like that Jeremy called her the quiet girl in the cafeteria reading Catcher in the Rye. And I think that that's a very dangerous player to have on the island with you. What I really disagreed with you guys saying is that you thought that she was one of the girls that were going to be weeded out by the bad elements, by the bad weather.
Yes.
The fact that she goes on solo hiking trips really struck me. I'm not a hiker and I certainly wouldn't do it alone. You know, that's when you like get trapped in crevices and have to chop off your own arm.
Oh,
you
no.
know, that's,
no.
that's like not, it's pretty hardcore. It's scary being out in the middle of nowhere with no
fair.
Way to reach anybody.
That is fair. That I did, overlook that. I know we talked about, 14ers. And so, you know, I think that sometimes when we look at these things that she's okay. New Hannah. Okay. Well, you know, Hannah isn't really outdoorsy, so I think I sort of projected that onto Gabby, which was probably unfair.
Well, the thing is, she says she's emotional, but I don't get the sense that she's super anxious, neurotic. Like, I think she might cry, but I don't think she'll cry.
I think she literally
quit.
Said in one of the previews about that she has, you know, anxiety.
Yeah, but then when you again, the interview said a lot to me. Like, she's not freaking out about the stray dog, whereas everyone else is acting like it's going to eat their face. You know, she's very comfortable in her surroundings. She's not doing a lot of nervous talking with Josh the way someone like Christian might be. I feel like she's a lot more comfortable in her skin than we're projecting onto her because of the whole Aubrey Hanna comparison. I think she's gonna do okay.
Okay, I would love to see it. Obviously, I have concerns, but I think she'd be a lot of fun if she could stick around.
Yeah, no, and she's very funny too. So, I hope she sticks around because this is one of my favorite character types. And again, they give really good confessionals. So I hope she goes deep in the game for that alone.
Okay, Angie, our seventh place finisher, who is it?
G.I. Jane.
Okay.
The Killer Bee.
Okay, Killer Bee. All right.
Yeah.
Tell us about Bee.
The G.I. Jane is the super athletic female challenge beast. So she's highly competitive and struggles the most with strategy and her ability to build close bonds with other players. So, I mean, Bee's brand new to the game, but she is a very strong physical threat.
Yeah. She didn't really have a great take on Survivor 35, right?
I know she seems to, some of the stuff that she says is pretty, pretty weird in general, you know, like, she says that, you know, figuring out the secret, like there's no way to know who's going to win. I'm like, that really like
tell
sparked
that to the lady that invented a system.
Yeah, I'm like my super fan elitism was like, ding, 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 ding. It's like, it's not rocket science. It's envisioning a path to an end, being adaptable enough to modify that path as needed, using deception and persuasion to remove key players that may obstruct your path, and creating personal bonds with everyone so that you go deep and you're never in danger of being removed yourself. Wait, that's how you win.
Are you reading that? Do you have that written down somewhere?
I have everything written down. I don't just walk in blind and just like, I'm just going to wing it with
the Survivor Rob Sesternina.
No, that's me just like, okay, what do you, if you had to write a definition of what makes a Survivor winner, mm-hmm. what would it be? And I wrote it quickly, if that makes you feel any better. But no, it's not a big secret what makes a winner.
It's like you're reading from the top of the Survivor box.
I'm reading the ingredients.
The rules.
Of the Survivor cereal.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like that she identified that she's a natural leader, but and then there's an there's a finesse, she said, to leading without telling people what to do. But she also said, I'm still learning how to do that. What I found most interesting about Bee and her background is the fact that she mentions that she ran away when she was 14 and that she was very angry when she was younger. And again, this is my personal experience maybe that's coloring this a little bit. But when I was working in fundraising, mm-hmm. my job in charity was at a homeless youth shelter, and I've seen kids like B again and again, and I understand the kind of environments that they're running from. And honestly, their biggest challenges are learning how to get along with other people. So I feel like she comes across like she's matured and she can handle herself, but these kids in situations like that, especially, you know, I've seen it with children of immigrants as well that run away young. They are very closed off. They're very hardened. They have big barriers up. So it's going to be tough for her to, I think, like her innate independence is going to isolate her from her tribe is what I'm trying to say. So it's going to be difficult for her to be in a tight alliance, or where she's going to feel like she's bonding with people because that's what bonding is to her. And they're going to still feel like she's on an island of her own. So. I mean, athletically, I think she'll do fine. But on the personal level, I think it might be a little bit more of a challenge for her.
Okay. Are you higher or lower than the system on B?
Honestly, the G.I. Jane goes pretty far these days. So the thing is, they make themselves an asset because they are so athletic and because they're not strategic and they're not constantly trying to, like, remember Michaela, she only got voted off when she started playing with shells in the sand, telling them, okay, so this is what's going to happen next, and this is why we need to be careful. Then all of a sudden they're like, oh crap, she's got a brain. So as long as B isn't trying to play Survivor, and I don't think she will be because she's so new, she's not really going to be running all the scenarios in her head over and over. So mm-hmm. I think she could go pretty deep.
Okay. All right. Angie, our sixth place finisher. Who is it? First person out in the finale.
First person out is Aaron Brockovich, who is Allison.
Okay, Allison, the Erin Brockovich. All right.
So she's our 28-year-old physician.
Yeah.
And she gave me a bit of a run for my money because she was the third woman who looked very, very similar on paper to the other two. So typically this character type is your everyday kind of woman. She's like the Kim Spradlin, the Danny Boatwright. She's usually very athletic, extremely likable, but has a normal kind of job, like an event planner or an accountant. And she does well because she doesn't play too hard. She doesn't get in everyone's face. The fact that Allison is a doctor could be a problem for her if she lets herself be too much of an A-type. But I was really impressed by her in her interview with Josh. And it's funny because she just made chief resident at her work. So she's literally Meredith Grey. But she compares herself to Kim and she just seems really laid back. And that is not typical of that character type. So she didn't have the intensity.
Yeah. I could have gone with her as a winner pick.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, for sure.
I don't really see a downside here, except I don't know if she could make the fire.
Yeah. Again with the fire.
Angie, when we're sitting here on finale night and we're talking about like, you know, the difference really was that so-and-so made the fire. The jury saw it. They loved it. They ate that up with a spoon.
Well, then you can say that I'm wrong.
Yeah. Allison, I mean, she was putting those sticks there. It was a disaster.
I think she knows how to make a fire. She's a super fan or an aspiring super fan. I'm more like a recovering super fan.
I don't know
fan.
Why you think super fans are good at making fires.
Because they know, they practice, they get on their rooftops and they like, I can make it with a magnifying glass. I can make it with flint. I can make it with my bare hands.
Who's the super fan that's good at making fire?
Zeke did that.
Three
different types of fire making he learned how to do with bamboo. He ordered, yeah. It was like he ordered bamboo from Amazon or something.
Yeah.
It was awesome.
Yeah, I think David Wright is actually good at making the fire also.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
So.
But I think that's
the exception to the rule.
Jean from South Africa. She's like, if you're a super fan, you gotta know how to make fire.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I like her. She's fun. She's easy to listen to. She's relatable. I like her approach to the game. I think she's going to make genuine connections, and I think she's going to go really far. I think she's going to do great.
Okay. Yeah, I think she should be pretty good here, as I feel I'm high on Allison.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Are we ready for top five, baby?
Top five, baby.
In the fifth position is our good old boy, who this season is our patron friend, Nick Wilson.
Nick Wilson. Okay. Top five, baby.
Kentucky Nick. So he is our super fan, super strategist, who doesn't like know-it-alls.
Yes.
Just kind of a burn. He tells Wiggler that he wants to be a regular recap guest, not a voicemail guest. Doesn't want the Randy Bailey spot.
Yeah.
But doesn't want to be a know-it-all. So call David Wright because he's out. Right? Yeah, he calls himself a redneck lawyer. It says he's like JT, and JT is like your typical good old boy as well. You're Mike Holloway and you're,
yeah.
Big Tom, all that stuff.
Yeah.
So, his philosophy is survive in advance. And I'm wondering, is this like the lawyer version of Anyone But Me? It's like fairly straightforward strategy, but, maybe keeping it simple is way better than like my Wikipedia definition that I came up with. So who knows?
Mm-hmm.
But.
Yeah.
So yeah, I like him. Other players think he looks super smart, like a Wall Street guy, but I think once they hear the accent, that's going to change. There seems to be like this weird phenomenon in the States that once a Southern accent comes out of people's mouths, like their attitudes towards the person completely changes. It goes from that guy looks like a cutthroat wolf of Wall Street to, aw, Kentucky Nick is a great guy, right?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know.
Like that's a real thing, right?
It is a thing. I don't know if there's a science to it, but I think that, you know, you sort of feel like, OK, well, what is, this fast talking city person up to try? And I think then your guard is down that, you know, you feel like that somebody that is from the South may not be up to trying. You know, they're more genuine, more authentic.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. I'm very, he seems very easy to get along with. I'm pretty high on Nick. And from a win perspective, Allison and Nick are the most likely to win the game according to the system.
Yeah.
So again, there's the boot order, but the one that ends up first in the and is based on average placement is not necessarily based on, you know, who has won the most out of the character types. It's very similar. The top seven are very, very similar in both ways you look at it. But,
yeah. I mean, I think Nick would be a fine winner pick. You know, mm-hmm. I could have gone with Nick. I didn't want to be accused of being too much of a homer. That I don't know what the downside is right now from he's a guy who is, you know, young enough, but he has life experience and he seems likable. He's excited. He knows the game. He can potentially do well in challenges. So I don't see any, you know, red flag downside with Nick.
No, I think it'll all come down to personal relationships. Like, can he get along with everybody, or just, you know, people that seem like the people, the fact that he's lived in the same place his whole life,
yeah,
is what I'm trying to say. That might make him a little bit more narrow minded in terms of like understanding how to relate to other people. That's the only thing.
Sure.
But I didn't hear any evidence of that. So
I think he has a high floor if we're going to be ranking these people.
Hmm. No, I agree.
Okay. All right.
So number four.
Top four.
Are you ready?
Okay. Who is our robbed goddess that does not get to go to the final three?
Easy there. That's our Heisenberg, which is Pat Cusack.
Wait, is robbed goddess a character type?
No, but I don't want to see Pat Cusack's picture and think of robbed goddess in the next.
Why path. Not?
I'm just because.
Okay. Pat Cusack. And what archetype is he?
He's our Heisenberg.
He's Heisenberg. Okay.
Heisenberg. So that's your Russell Hantz, your Tony Vlachos, Johnny Fairplay's a Heisenberg. This is a male character who's a little rough around the edges, blue collar guy, super high energy, wants to bring chaos. This is the guy. Okay. He lies, he cheats, he finds all the idols.
System is really high on Pat Cusack.
It really is. So remember when I said there are some people that were a little bit high that I wasn't agreeing with? I've not seen or heard anything from Pat that makes me feel like he's getting this far in the game. So I think if he makes the merge, it's only because someone's kind of dragging him there. So, I mean, he says he needs to build relationships. And this is the part where I think Pat will struggle the most. Like, Heisenbergs can only win if they have a strong social game. They need to be likable as people. And the other players all are already saying, like, he's drawing attention to himself. He's being really annoying. He has no spatial awareness. And I got to be honest, he's giving me such a Dan Foley vibe. And Dan Foley is also a Heisenberg. And that really worries me for Pat. Like, I think he's going to have big ideas without any ability to listen or reflect. The fact that, you know what, it was a real red flag for me when he said that Lyrsa's tattoos are meaningless.
Mm-hmm.
So he doesn't understand the relevance of someone else's tattoos. Therefore, he's concluded they are meaningless. And that tells me he's not open to anything but his own understanding of the world. And he's going to be very rigid.
Yeah, but he has a bunch of tattoos.
I know. And some of them seem like it wouldn't be intuitive for me to look at those and understand the meaning. So I don't know why he's looking at, you know, someone else's artwork that obviously they put it up permanently on their body for a reason and just saying like, meh, meaningless. I don't understand. Because he was being judgy, too. Like, I don't understand how anyone could put something so meaningless on their body. It's like, you have no idea what her personal story is. So that's going to get him in trouble, I think.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So
maybe I'm just grabbing that baton and just running with it. But I did not get the feeling like he was like at ease socially with other people, that they were already like, oh, God, that guy. So.
Yeah, I don't feel great about Pat getting this far in the game. I think it'd be a fun ride. I'd be here for it.
I don't even feel like he was funny, you know, like I don't know. I don't know. I don't think he's making the merge. I think he's going to be an early boot.
Mm hmm. Okay, so I could see it. I would guess that as well. What do you think about my theory about he might be okay because of the elements?
I think that's relatively true. I mean, there are a couple people out there that are going to be able to handle it a lot better than other people, but I don't think that's enough to. I mean. Even if he's the one who's like given off heat in the shelter, if no one wants to touch him because they're so pissed off, you know, like it doesn't really benefit him. So I didn't get a good sense of whether or not he's an aggressively an aggressive kind of guy the way Dan was, or if he's just a little bit loud.
Okay.
You know?
All right. Let's talk about the top three, our final three from this season, Angie.
Yeah. So, and the number three spot is our beloved surfer dude, who is Alec Merlino.
Okay. Wow. Alec Merlino in the top three for this season.
Surfer dudes do awesome in this game.
Oh, boy.
So that is the easygoing guy with the long blonde hair who calls everybody bro. It was so easy to put his type, put him in this type thanks to Wiggler. Like, he refers to the popular surfer dude archetype on the show, and every single player was like, oh, he's the surfer dude. So that was very easy. He's charming. Probst is already in love with him. What I thought was really funny too.
Bartending Goliath, Alec Merlino.
Yeah. He's a giant in the bartending world, Rob. Don't underestimate it. He inspired Wiggler to ask if he was tweaking out. Like, what sorcery is this that you can get Wiggler to talk like that? I think he's really a chameleon when he interviews people. He really, like, matches the person walking through the door, and he tries to, like, really talk in their language. It's crazy to me how he does that. It's amazing.
Yeah.
I really like Alec. At first, his obsessive use of the word like was really, really driving me nuts. But once I got through that mess, I could hear like a level of emotional intelligence in him that really surprised me. He was talking about lightening a bad mood. He was talking about that as being currency of the game. And that struck me as very insightful. He was just fun. He was easy to listen to. He made me laugh a couple of times. He is worried about the little irritations, like repetitive noises that are going to be really tough when he's hangry all the time. And oh my God, bro, I know my house needs to be silent. I am a lunatic when it comes to noises.
I didn't know he's such a Alec Merlino.
I absolutely am. That's it. Me and him, we're going to just sit and just be quiet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, he had me laughing just talking about the stuff that was going to drive him nuts. So what worried me, the red flags about him, is him talking about how he wanted to be proud of the game that he was going to play. He didn't want to. The way he said it is, I don't want people to be like, screw that guy. But I think what he meant was, I don't want people to hate me. I don't want to do anything that I'm going to be embarrassed of or regret later. And people, you know, have good relationships, but then screw them up by being a bastard, I think. Because he was saying like Jay and Joe were themselves and they didn't become someone else. And he wants to be like that. So that's when he lost me as a player, because it's like, if you're just going to be a nice guy, you're not going to win.
Mm-hmm.
So ultimately, I just don't think he's got the strategic drive to win. I don't think he'll cut people or lie when he needs to. And the surfer dudes who have won have the ability to blindside people that they care about and that they also keep their closest allies with them all the way to the end. And it's a balance of understanding the difference. Like, I feel like some like Devin seemed very quick to turn on his alliance, but Seabass didn't want to turn on anyone ever. And it's the Tysons that get to the end. It's RS who gets to the end. It's the understanding of these two people are my ride or dies, and everyone else I'm going to make them believe are my ride or die, and then I'm going to get to the end and win. Oh. And win.
Okay. Are you feeling like Alec is headed towards the final three?
I think he's going to go very deep in the game. Yes. I don't know. I think he's going to go out in the Devon spot around like five or four.
Okay. All right. So there's only two spots left here, and I think I know where we're going. All right, Angie, who is the second place finisher? Actually, tell us who the winner is. Let's do that.
You're going to jump right to the end?
Yeah, give us the winner. So basically, just to create some suspense, Christian is here, and so is Elizabeth, right?
Yes.
And so one of them will be your winner. One of them is your runner-up. Who is the winner of Survivor David versus Goliath is who?
Elizabeth Olsen.
Wow. Okay. Mm-hmm. See, I was surprised because I thought you were going to say that she was going to be the mom that doesn't win. But you're going to say, wait, this is where now you're going to say, well, she's the most likely to get to the end, but I don't think she's going to win.
She's also my winner pick.
Okay.
I love Elizabeth. I think she's going to do extremely well. So typically the mommy dearest does get to the end. She's the older woman who has kids.
I like this, Angie, that this is not like nebulous. This is you're coming with a, you're not being too wishy-washy.
Wishy-washy.
Fancy Fencerton.
Nope. No, I'm being pragmatic about this. I'm laying it all on the line. I'm saying
like
not
that.
Only
that's good.
Yep. Yep. I'm, you know, anyone pretty much in the top five has the chance to win, but I believe that that Elizabeth is going to go bring it home. She's getting the W.
Okay. What is it about Elizabeth that you like so much?
I believe that she understands the game well enough. And I believe that she, when she says that she's extremely well-rounded socially, physically, and strategically based on, the conversations she's had with Josh and what I've read. I believe that she has it, but, not in any sort of obvious way. No one's going to see her coming at all, but already the other players are saying that I really like her. I want to align with her. I think she's going to be making, I think she's going to have a really easy time making alliances and people are really going to trust her. I like the fact that she said that she's willing to look for an idol all night long. She's like worked on ranches her whole life. So again, your theory about like the people who can survive the elements okay are going to do better. I think, you know, she's going to play really hard and she has a fundamental respect of the game too, which really, really struck me. She said that she said this game is serious. It's important to her to be one of the better players. She wants to play big. It's not just enough to be there. Like, she doesn't want to, you know, sully the opportunity that she's been given, mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah, she's pumped up to be there. It seems like that it is a dream of hers. What about in terms of getting along with the other players? How do you think she's going to do there?
I think she's going to do great. I mean, especially in the tribe that she's starting off with, it might be a little bit trickier when she's with all the professional women, but the fact that she, you know, she is a natural extrovert. She says she cannot stand being alone. And usually those types of people are very, very good at getting along with just about anybody. So yeah, the system doesn't lie. I think that she's the one.
Okay. All right. The system doesn't lie, but sometimes it could be wrong, right?
Well, it doesn't. It's not maliciously wrong,
right?
Ever.
It's not. It's not trying to mislead, but sometimes it does give the incorrect information.
It has the best intentions.
Yes. Okay. All right. So then, tell us about your know-it-all here, Christian Hubicki.
I love this character type. So the know-it-all is the younger male, snarky, clever super fan.
I mean, Christian, the fact that you were going to love this guy is like the biggest sure thing of all time in the history of podcasting.
Absolutely. It's always like, I'm a sucker for the know-it-all. So Christian was the easiest player to cast in the system. So not only is he a know-it-all, it's like he's an amalgam of every know-it-all that ever was. Mm-hmm. So, I LOL'd like four times at least reading his bio, like very, very witty in a very abstract kind of way. Like, Nicole was going off about his birding, but the reason why it was funny is because he doesn't actually do birding, which is why wanting binoculars to try it, because why not, is mm-hmm. hilarious.
Yeah.
So, I'm not sure why he's a David if he's been on Stephen Colbert, but whatever.
He's been bullied.
Whatever. The guy's highly successful and very, very smart. So, well,
how many nerdy guys do you want on the Goliath tribe, Angie?
I want everyone on the show to be a nerdy guy. Is that, can we have a season just like that just for me?
Nerds versus nerds?
Yeah. We could have nerds versus blurreds.
No,
that would be fine.
No. Too controversial. Too controversial.
Okay.
Yeah. We don't need to do some sort of Survivor Cook Islands with nerds.
Well, that's your call. That's your decision. Your opinion, I suppose. I like the idea that he was sitting and taking alphanumeric coded notes, just in case anyone peeped over his shoulder, I guess. He wanted to make sure it was all in code as he was lurking about Ponderosa. It was
I don't get that, Angie. Why do you need to take notes at Ponderosa? Like, I could see taking notes at casting finals, but why do you need to take notes at Ponderosa?
Well, he DM'd me, actually, before the podcast to
don't
let me know
Nicole.
That one of the things slid right in. He wanted to let me know that one of the things he was really trying to figure out before they started playing is what everyone's character type was. And he said it was really hard not being able to talk to them, just going by looks alone. But I, you know, when he was saying to Wiggler that he, you know, he already wants to align with Elizabeth, I think that's because, you know, he figured out like, okay, that's the mom characters, or that's the older woman characters. So that's the one I, you know, he was saying he wants to do like a Ryan Chrissy kind of, alliance. So I think that's amazing idea to do that. And I think it's, you know, I can barely keep them straight when I'm like got my Google Doc open. So I would definitely need to take notes to make sure that I'm writing down everything that I'm noticing. The fact that he didn't want anyone to be able to decipher it was the part I thought was really funny.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Yeah. Okay. But if somebody looks over and sees what Meredith Grey.
Yeah, what does that mean?
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, you were not high on Christian in your podcast with Nicole.
I can separate the person from. I think that he seems like a wonderful guy, but I think that it's going to go particularly well. I think that people are really on the lookout for this type of person. That he, to me, and maybe I've said this before, and it hasn't always been the case, but the first time he does anything tricky, that everybody's like, got to get rid of this guy. I think that, you know, when you talk about that, the first part of the game is about, you know, building relationships with people. I think that people are that if you have an alliance with this person, maybe there's one or two people that feel like they can really trust this person. But I think that, you know, based on some of the success that other players have had, I think people are worried, oh, this guy is going to, you know, screw me over eventually.
I think you're vastly overestimating the intimidation factor that other players are going to feel off of Christian. And, you know, you cited Bradley as one of your examples, but you left Ryan out entirely. Like, he went right to the end and no one was like, oh, God, that guy is such a threat. So I think the more he the self-deprecating.
Yeah, but nobody really trusted him.
No, but he wasn't particularly trustworthy. I think Christian's got a lot more "oh gosh, guys" kind of attitude about him. I think he's going to have a much easier time making friends. And you know what? You don't need to be high on him. That's fine. Just means that he's going to choose me over you to be his new best friend. Okay. So that's all right. We'll go on best friend outings and laugh about the, you know, the day that you didn't think he was going to make top two.
All right. Look, it'll be one hell of a season.
Yeah. I mean, the only red flag I had with him is I am nervous that the nervous talking thing gets away from him a little bit. And I think everyone already, as you were saying, because everyone already sees him as a Cochrane, this could work against him a little bit. But, you know, super geniuses who speak with confidence are unrelatable and scary. So it's better that he's got this kind of nervousness going on. I think it's going to make him seem like he's not a threat.
Okay. There it is, your 20 Survivor David versus Goliath cast members, as determined by the Angie Kontz type system.
I'm loving it.
Okay. Angie, anything else that you want to tell us about Survivor David versus Goliath?
I did want to briefly talk about alliances because we haven't done that in a while. Like, okay. I keep a running chart of the top five each season by character type. And I do this because it tells me, like, on a very basic level, who's a trustworthy person to have in your final five alliance? And also, who's likely to beat you out of your alliance and who should be cut before you get to final two or three? And it's interesting because it's changed a little bit since the last time we talked about it. The surfer dude has made it to top five more than any other character type in all of Survivor. Like, that's a lot of pressure for Alec. It really is. Mm-hmm. But he's gone 11 times. He has the highest win rate out of the people to make to top five. It's pretty crazy. So, like, if you're going to have the surfer dude in your alliance, like, be very careful as you get to the end. Like, it's, you remember how everyone was like really high on Devin? All the Devin fans were like, oh, he's going to win. Yeah, it's definitely a possibility. You got to cut that guy.
Yeah.
But the other five types that have made it to the top five 10 times, so more than any other type. So these are the types you see again and again getting in the really solid alliances. It's the good old boy, the John McClane, Mr. Miyagi, Heisenberg, and the Mommy Dearest. But what's interesting out of this is out of those types, the Mr. Miyagi is the only one to never win. So basically, you want to bring Mike White to the end of this game.
Mm-hmm. That seems like a dangerous bet to make based on, like, like, are you saying that if you are a player playing in a future season, if you mm-hmm. identify Mike White as the Mr. Miyagi, then take him to the end because the character type system says that he won't win?
Yes. I mean,
boy, that's a lot of money riding on the system, not lying.
Well, it's more like when you're first trying, because at the very, like, you got to make your alliances on day one. And you have zero information, just watching people at Ponderosa. And I think this is one of the reasons why Christian wanted to try and use the character type system. It's like, if there's anything, any piece of intelligence that you can use to try and make your decisions have a little bit more backing, then use it. I'm sure by the time you get to top three, you're going to have a good idea of whether or not Mike White can beat you. But there are a lot of Mr. Miyagis who go to the end and sit there and don't get anything. And in fact, get like insulted like Will Sims. It's like, mm-hmm. that's far more likely than that person winning. And, you know, like when you're with a penner, you realize this guy's dangerous. I need to cut him. There's no way I can bring this guy to the end. So
that's right. Okay. Angie,
you were just waiting for me to say penner.
Well, I mean, if you say it, I'll give you a penner.
Also interesting to note is the I Can See Your Periscope has made it top five 9 times and also never won. So that's like the cast character.
The greatest character type to never win.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Angie, what a great job you've done. All the listeners appreciate all the hard work that you've put into this for another season. If people want to share their list of the 20 character types, I know you're always interested in seeing what other people came up with.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You can email me. I'm at angiekontz@gmail.com.
Okay.
People, like a lot of people email me before the season to say these are my picks.
And Angie and I, again, I mentioned at the top of the show, have been very hard at work. All of the research that Angie puts into the character type system, she probably did tenfold into working with me and trying to document the system that we've created in using Patreon as a method to crowdfund Rob as a Podcast. And we've put all that information into an online course, which you could check out. PatreonLikeAPro.com is the name of the course. We are also working on releasing a free webinar, which is about how to monetize your passion, talking about crowdfunding, among other ways that you can monetize your content, Angie. And that's going to be coming out pretty soon.
We're working on that right now. It's a really great way to get a sense of, you know, taking your internal temperature as well about whether or not you're ready to really launch into Patreon and monetize your channel and get a sense of, you know, what we have to offer and whether or not it's right for you.
And obviously, Patreon and using that for Rob's Podcast has really, you know, changed my life and changed the fact that I was able to put so much time into making this podcast. And if you are a content creator, I think that it would be amazing for you to experience the same thing. And you can find out more information at PatreonLikeAPro.com. Of course, Angie Kontz is on Twitter at Angie Kontz.
That's me.
Tweeting about Big Brother.
Obsessively, yeah.
Yes. Okay. It's all. Will you be live tweeting the finale?
Maybe. I'm usually like, I'm pretty focused when I'm watching, and I'm preparing for heartbreak, so I may be too sad.
Yeah. All right. Angie. Anything else you want to mention?
I think that's it.
Okay. All right. Well, great work once again. Just to reset the upcoming show schedule, of course, we are going to have both the Survivor premiere and the Big Brother finale coming up on Wednesday. So I will be live at 11:15 p.m. Eastern to recap the Big Brother 20 finale. I'm sorry, Survivor fans, but I will be back with you on Thursday morning with Stephen Fishback coming up at 10 a.m. Eastern, 7 a.m. Pacific. There will be a fourth episode and final episode for this season of First One Out coming from Josh Wigler on Wednesday night. So be on the lookout for that. So no know-it-alls Wednesday night, but a fourth episode of First One Out coming out after the episode is over. And then Stephen and I will be live on Thursday morning. And then I will talk to the first player voted out of Survivor, David versus Goliath, in our exit interview. And then I will be speaking with Dr. Mike later on in the day. What character type was Dr. Mike?
He was a Mr. Miyagi. You could have brought him to the end, yeah. And he wouldn't win.
Yep. I wouldn't win.
There you go.
Okay. All right. Great work, Angie. Thanks again to everybody who listened to the podcast. We'll be back with much more. You have a hashtag, Angie?
Thirsty in Florida.
Thirsty in Florida. Whoa. All right, everybody. Have a good one. Take care. Bye.